Welcome to the Pen to Profit Podcast. We cover everything from writing captivating prose to grammar to marketing tips, tricks, and insider advice to turn your passion for writing into cold, hard cash. Get ready to skyrocket your book sales and your audience with our guidance. Buckle up because you're going on a rollicking ride through the realm of writing riches because the Pen to Profit Podcast starts now.
All right, and we are live. Welcome back again, folks, to another episode of the Pen to Profit Podcast. I am your host, a friendly neighborhood copy editor and proofreader, Ray Evans. And today I'm joined by a very special guest. Kate Conte / Liz Mugavaro is the best-selling authors of three mystery book series, two with Kensington Books and one with St. Martin's Press. As Liz, she writes the Positively Organic series, which sounds delicious, by the way, the first of which was an Agatha Award nominee for Best First Novel. As Kate, she writes the Cat Cafe Mysteries and the Full Moon Mysteries featuring newbie witch Violet Mooney. She's also a creativity coach helping other writers fulfill their creative dreams with a touch of woo-woo. She's the founder of the Creativity Lab, a membership for writers. All right, so Liz or Kate, actually, do you want me to call you Liz or Kate or both?
You can call me anything you want.
Anything I want. Okay, so I'm going to call you Bob for the duration of our interview. All right, so Bob, do you want to say hello to the audience? Can you also tell us what your favorite novel or book is and why?
Oh my gosh. Well, first, thank you so much for having me. And second, you started out with the hardest question of all, because how do you pick just one? I have to say Anything by Dennis Lehane is my favorite. I love the way he writes. He's just a poet. He's just a poet. That's all.
All right. Okay. So I want to jump right into this. I've actually never had an author who has pseudonyms or a pseudonym or alter ego. So I want to get right into that first before we get into your work as a creativity coach. So I wanted to know if you could tell me, how did you get your start as a writer?
Yeah, so I have been writing forever, basically. I always knew that I wanted to write books. I loved books ever since I was little. And, I'd make my mother sit there and read to me for as long as she would stand it. And then when I could read myself, I would take the books and sit at her typewriter and start typing out chapters just to see what it felt like. I did all the things, though. I went to college and I majored in English. I went to grad school and I majored in writing and publishing. And then I really started to think about, what do I want to write? And I remembered that, it would make sense to write crime because I love crime and I always read crime. I like very dark things.
Oh, you love crime? I just want to let you know the FBI is actually listening to this right now.
So
could you describe your crimes in details and the dates and the people that you were working with?
No, I wouldn't be surprised if they're not already watching my browsing history. I love crime. My grandfather was a detective, so he would tell me, PG rated stories from his days as a detective when I was little. And I was just fascinated by it. So when I finished grad school, I decided I was going to start writing crime. So I didn't really know how to do that. So I figured the first thing I would do was look up mystery writer conferences. So I found the New England Crime Bake and I started going and I started writing my first book. And that's what I did for like 10 years. I wrote, I rewrote, I went to conferences, I networked, I made friends, I learned, I pitched, I got rejected, and I did all of that for, pretty much 10 years. And then I had joined Sisters in Crime, which is an international group for writers, and I belonged to one of the chapters, the New England chapter. And back in 2011, an agent had approached the chapter president and asked if she could refer some writers who might want to do some proposals for cozy mysteries. So I was like, oh, well, what's that? Even though cozies weren't really the thing that I had been trying to write, I was like, I may as well, So I answered the email. I met with this agent. We worked up a proposal, and that became my Positively Organic mystery series. So I like to say after 10 years, it kind of happened overnight.
Oh, wow. Awesome. So I guess I'm not all that familiar with mystery. I don't think I've actually ever read a mystery book myself. What is a cozy mystery? What does that mean exactly?
Sure. So there's many subgenres in the mystery world. Cozy is it's basically based on the Agatha Christie traditional mystery, and you know they're a little bit more easy. They're easier to read. So if you're, you know, there's still murder, there's still mayhem, there's still villains. You know, there's still all the things. You're just not seeing a lot of gore and violence on the page. You're not reading the details of, you know, blood spurting out everywhere, and you know, there's no serial killers. They usually take place in a small town or a small community within a larger town, and the idea is they are typically series. You know, the readers end up becoming almost friends with the characters, right? And at the end, justice is always restored. So,
oh, awesome. So you had mentioned in there that you were you're a member of Sisters in Crime. I actually know who that organization is. I've advertised with them in the past because as a proofreader and copy editor, it makes sense to go where writers are. Yeah. And the New England Crime Bake. So I was curious. So could you go a little bit into what these organizations do and how they support writers such as yourself?
Yeah, Sisters in Crime is a phenomenal organization. It was created, I want to say it was around 100 years ago at this point. I don't remember offhand, so don't quote me on that. But it was created a long time ago by women writers who recognized that women weren't getting as much of a fair shake in the crime writing community. So it was created to basically support and enhance and, you know, help raise up women in the crime writing community. And, you know, it's still doing fabulous work to this day and just getting better and better. So it's an international organization. There's many, many local chapters. They offer online workshops, in-person workshops, support. It's just, it's a phenomenal group to belong to.
Workshops about what?
Pretty much anything. I mean, I just took one on plotting. They have them on things like writing tools. Like, so Scrivener is a writing software that a lot of writers use. So they'll do workshops on how to use Scrivener. They do, you know, workshops on how to write comedy, you know, what comedy and mysteries. There's many, many topics that there's just really a lot of topics that they offer to writers.
I see. So it's pretty much like the workshops are kind of like personal development to help with like aspects of writing, or I've seen like marketing, things of that nature.
Absolutely.
That'd be a fair assessment. Okay. Yeah. And do you have to pay like a membership to join a group like Sisters in Crime?
Yeah, it's pretty minimal. So I think you have to join the parent organization, right? And then there's a smaller fee for the chapter organizations.
But so based off of, you know, your assessment, being a member and all the personal development and networking opportunities, would you say that it's worth whatever the annual membership fee is?
Oh, 100%.
Based off the value you get?
Yeah. I mean, it's not that much. I want to say the annual of the parent organization fee is maybe $125 a year.
So that works out to, well, I'm not a math person. That's why I work in books. That's around maybe 125 divided by 12. That's just like $12 a month. Like that's roughly like what, a drink at Starbucks with inflation?
Pretty much.
Like every week. So yeah, that's definitely like a better, you know, investment in like your career and your craft. Yeah. And like, I always tell, you know, anyone who's listening, if you are a writer, regardless of your genre, there more than likely is like some sort of a, like an organization or an association for your particular genre or subgenre. So you can even go on Google and type in whatever your genre is and hopefully you'll find a summit. So you can be around, I guess, you know, like-minded people and get those specific, personalized, different development opportunities that you were just discussing there. So I'm still interested in this, in the pseudonym thing you got going on. So I was snooping on your website earlier today. And so under your name, Liz, you have the Positively Organic Mystery series, and you have some other series written under the name Kate Conti. So I'm really, really curious about this. Could you explain why do you use a pseudonym at all? And how do you balance these identities? And how is your writing and your writing process different when you're writing as Liz versus writing as Kate?
Yeah, so my pseudonym came out of the fact that, so I had my first series published under my real name. I never actually expected to publish under my real name because no one can ever say it. So, but again, this whole thing happened so fast that first time around that I didn't even really have time to think about, you know, coming up with a different name. So I ended up using my real name. And then when my agent approached me to write a series for a different publisher, they wanted a different name. So I picked Kate Conti, which Conti was my grandfather's last name, my police detective grandfather. So that's why I chose that. And then my third series was actually published by my first publisher, but they wanted to use the Kate name. So it's very kind of complicated, but in a nutshell, that's what it is. So all of the series are in the same genre. So my process doesn't really differ. You know, if I do branch out into a different genre going forward, there's the possibility I'll have a different name. And that would make sense, honestly, because if people are used to Liz or Kate being a cozy writer, they might pick up a book in a different genre and not know what they ended up reading. So.
Gotcha. Okay. So Kate comes from your grandfather, who was the detective. So, but where did Kate come from, though?
I just picked a name that sounded good with Conti.
Okay.
Yes. There wasn't a lot of thought involved in that one. I just wanted to use that last name. So.
Gotcha. All right. So I'm not well versed in mystery writing, but I do understand that writing mysteries, it definitely requires like meticulous plotting and use of like red herrings, etc. So I guess, could you explain to me and the audience, like, what's your approach to constructing a compelling mystery story that keeps the readers guessing?
Yeah, so that's a potentially long answer. So
we got an hour, Bob. So, you know.
Yeah, so I like to start with, so let me first say, I was never a plotter. I used to kind of approach every book by the seat of my pants, which is affectionately known as being a pantser. And it's kind of worked until, you know, when you start having deadlines, that sometimes doesn't go so well if you write yourself into a corner and don't know what you're doing. So that did happen to me a couple times. And I have friends who are very good at plotting. So I ended up having a plotting session in the middle of a book with a friend of mine because I had written myself into a very bad corner and couldn't get out. And I was, you know, a couple weeks away from my deadline. And she got on a FaceTime with me and we sorted the whole thing out. And from that moment on, I swore that I was going to become a little bit more of a plotter, if not a full-blown plotter. So I really started to think about my structure before I sat down to write a book at that point. And usually I would sit down with this friend of mine and before I started every book after that, and we would kind of talk through a few big plot points. So obviously the inciting incident, so who's killed. And I like to try to think of a why. Sometimes that changes as I'm writing, but I like to try to start out with a why that person was killed and have an idea of who killed them, which also could potentially change and has happened to me multiple times. So I start out with that. And then I try to think about, you know, who the other suspects are. So I like to have five or six suspects in a book. So I'll think about people that either are known to the town or people that are known to the victim, and how they might all connect, how there might be some sort of connection to the sleuth, to the town, and how it's all going to come together at the end, because it's really important in a cozy to have that connectivity between the town and the killer. You're not going to see in a cozy, you know, a serial killer comes to town and murders people. It has to be somebody with some kind of tie to the town. Okay. So I'm usually first thinking about, you know, again, the victim, the suspects, how and when the person's killed, where in the book that's going to show up. And then, you know, how am I going to unravel the mystery? So all of the people who are identified as suspects have to have some kind of a secret. So the secret might not be actually killing someone. That obviously will be one person, but they all have to have some secret that makes it apparent that they could be the one to kill them. So there has to be an investigation that the sleuth, who is always an amateur in a cozy, has to go through this process of looking at all these suspects, figuring out, you know, what they were really doing that night or that day, what their actual secret was, and kind of eliminating them from that slate of suspects. And so between all those clues and red herrings, then the sleuth is kind of going through this process and she's eliminating. And then there's always a point in the book where she thinks she knows what's going to happen, but something goes very, very wrong. And she realizes she's been down the wrong path. She's got the wrong person in mind. The killer's still out there. There's usually some kind of a ticking clock. She's got to, you know, she or he has got to really, you know, step it up and solve this mystery. And then that's when she kind of starts eliminating the last few suspects and figuring out the right path to go down, which leads her to a showdown with the killer.
Well, that was a lot.
Yes.
I had no idea that much went into like writing mysteries. I got to ask you, because I was looking at some of your books on your website on Amazon. For the Positively Organic Mysteries, are there actually cat food recipes in there?
There are recipes in there. But so the funny story about that was when I got the contract, it was created as a gourmet pet food series. And I had no idea that cozy readers were so interested in recipes. And this was back in, 10 years ago or so, yeah. When culinary cozies were super hot. And so I didn't know that people took recipes very seriously. So the night before I was about to turn this book in, I realized I didn't have any recipes. So I sort of scrambled a few together and, kind of turned it in again by the seat of my pants. And it didn't go that well. So I realized that I needed to figure something else out for this because I'm not a cook. And I, it's so funny how the universe works, but I happened to stumble upon a couple when I was walking my dog. We got to talking because my dog was very friendly. And they ended up telling me that their son owned a gourmet pet food bakery.
Oh.
And so, long story short, we ended up talking. He agreed to be a collaborator. He provided me recipes. I promoted him. And it was a lovely partnership until that series ended.
Wow. What are the odds of that happening?
I know.
I was thinking that if she's writing those recipes, she probably has to go get a cat. She has to see if the cat will actually eat them to make sure that the recipes are legitimate. I was thinking about the other day. So I was actually doing my grocery shopping and I was walking through the pet food aisle. And I was wondering, they say like the cat food is like chicken and gravy, turkey, shrimp. How do we actually know it tastes like those things unless a human is actually trying it? Or sell it. It could taste like sandpaper for all we know. I really think it's just marketing. It's a psyop for them to jack up the prices on cat food. But that's just my personal opinion.
Well, if you're buying canned cat food, honestly, mm-hmm. there's probably not a lot of real chicken or any real anything in there. So the recipes that appeared in my books and the things that I've always fed my dogs, not so much my cats, because I had a lot of rescue cats and they were all kind of old and set in their ways. But all the food was human grade. My dogs eat raw food. I don't try not to feed them out of a can.
Gotcha. Yeah. I just had a brain fart. I was going to say something, but we could fix that in editing later. So that's really not a big deal. All right. So again, I was on your website either yesterday or earlier today. So I wanted to shift gears. So it looks like you also work as a creativity coach. So I wanted to know if you could explain to me and to the audience, what does a creativity coach exactly do? And how do you help writers overcome common creative hurdles? And what kind of services do you offer?
Sure thing. So I started thinking about this the year before the pandemic. So I kind of started it and then everything got put on hold because of the pandemic. But over the past couple of years, I've really been thinking about, how my own journey went as a writer when I didn't have a lot of support. I had parents who were very well-meaning, but who also didn't think it was believable to become a writer and make a living at it. So my ideas of writing and spending my life doing that were never taken seriously. And that takes a toll on you as a creative person because you start to think that your work is not serious and it's just something to be done off the side of your desk.
I
think every writer or artist of any kind can, right? Because it's just been dismissed for so long. And I would see so many people, when people found out I was writing books, they would say, oh, I've always wanted to write a book, but, I never had time or I never thought I could do it or I never, fill in the blank. And even at conferences, seeing newer writers coming to the conferences and, hearing conversations that they were having with, people in the business and kind of walking away very deflated, I just felt like there was a lot of room for people to have someone to hold space for them as they learn how to bring their creativity to life. So that's kind of where I started. And, you know, I had to do a lot of work to recover my own creativity after, you know, spending years, again, listening to people tell me it wasn't a viable career, and then working in corporate for many, many years, and, you know, just doing all the things that sort of suck the soul right out of you. So about a year and a half ago, I started a membership site for writers called the Creativity Lab. And really the idea of it is to, you know, first and foremost, be a community for writers who want that companionship, who want to know that they can jump on a Zoom call and have 25 minutes to, you know, do some quiet writing and know that there are people on the other side of that computer screen who are also writing and who believe in them and who are going to cheer them on. We do work to kind of, you know, make your creativity come to life, right? Like, so the creative recovery exercises. So Julia Cameron wrote The Artist's Way, and that was a book that really had an impact on my life. And so I believe in doing a lot of that work to kind of uncover the reasons why you lost your creativity and figure out a way to kind of get it back, to start writing again, whether it's journaling, whether it's fiction writing, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. And providing a place where people can do that and have accountability and have community and also learn. We also have guest speakers come to the lab, you know, people like Julie Henricus, who's the executive director of Sisters in Crime. She was at our group last month, teaching writers on how to manage their time better so they can get their writing done. So we do a lot of things like that. And we meet, you know, 5 or 6 times a week, and we write, and we're just there for each other.
Awesome. So you had mentioned something in passing, creative recovery exercises. Could you elaborate a little bit on like some specific creativity recovery exercises that you do with members of your lab, or your group?
Yeah. So a lot of it is like inner work, really, right? So, you know, if you pick up The Artist's Way, you're going to find there's 12 chapters basically, and each of those chapters has exercises that Julia Cameron outlines for people to kind of really dig in and get to the bottom of, you know, where they kind of lost their way when it came to their creative life. So we kind of riff on that book. Sometimes we do some of the exercises that are in the book. We're actually talking about taking some time and going through, like taking each chapter and going through it, like over a month period of time. Mm-hmm. And really kind of digging into, so some of the questions that we toss around are, you know, who was the first person who made you feel like your creativity was not valid? Right, or some variation.
You were just saying you weren't asking me.
Honestly, that's an answer that comes up a lot, right? And we've had whole conversations. I mean, I have someone in my membership who's writing a book about, it's a cozy mystery, and she's actually killing off a teacher who told her that she was stupid when she was young, right? So this is her way of getting revenge, and I love it because these people, they, you know, sometimes they don't understand the impact they have if they make a passing comment even, or, you know, again, even in a well-meaning way. So it's a lot of really like stopping to look at, you know, where your self-confidence went, why you feel like you might not be able to do this, why you're feeling like your imagination is lacking, you know, working on ways to carve out time to actually get some writing done, which is a lot of what we do in the lab. So again, we do 25 minute timers. So even if someone can join once a week for 25 minutes, they're shocked when they realize how much writing they can actually get done during that time. So.
Interesting. And you said the name of that book by Julia Cameron was The Artist's Way?
Yes.
Got it. All right. I just wanted to make sure. I wasn't just texting on my phone. I was actually making a note of that because I want to be sure to get that there in the show notes. All right. That's pretty interesting because you had mentioned kind of bringing it full circle up earlier. You had mentioned that, you know, you were in a couple of groups of your own, like Sisters of Crime, New England Crime Bake, where you were getting like a personal development, working with your peers and getting that accountability. And, like, it's almost like coming full circle. Now you have your own community, the Creativity Lab, where you're kind of, you know, I was like paying it forward to other newer artists, writers as well. So I think that's actually pretty cool. So I want to go back a little bit to your bio that I was introduced with earlier. You had mentioned that you add a touch of quote unquote woo-woo to your coaching. Can you elaborate a little bit for me in the audience on what the woo-woo is and how it benefits your clients?
Yeah, so I have always been obsessed with things like crystals and essential oils and tarot cards and voodoo oracle dolls? Cards. I'm known to have a voodoo doll here and there. Oh. But no, I love using these tools, right? Because, you know, for me, the ritual of writing is important. So if you were to see my desk, you know, there's a lot of crystals sitting around it, but they're all here for a reason, right? So I pick crystals that either in I feel like I need for my mood that day, for the work I'm doing that day. I like to have that energy around me. I like to have smells. There's a whole module that I do in my lab, in the membership, that encourages people to set up a writing space. And it doesn't mean that you have to sit there every single time you're writing, but it's, you know, usually you want to have at least one space that you know is a dedicated writing space. Mm-hmm. And have things there that make you feel good, that give you inspiration. So for me, I have crystals, I have incense, I have an essential oil diffuser. I like smells. So I use a lot of those things. And I always pull either a tarot card or an oracle card before I do a writing session. Because, you know, I like to get that message or that affirmation, or even something to jumpstart my writing. So I have every month, I do a workbook for the Creativity Lab members. They're all based on, the month work is based on a tarot card. So we have the card of the month, and then there's fiction prompts, there's journal prompts. The card has, you know, some meaning, and the prompts are structured around what that card's meaning is. And some of them are, you know, looking to get to that, some of that recovery work when you're journaling. So, you know, for example, if you pull the Empress card, you know, how can you bring some of that Empress energy to your life, to your writing life? How can you birth something new as far as your creative process is going? So things like that. So I do like to use those kinds of inspirations and prompts for people.
That's awesome. It's funny you mentioned about kind of having like a dedicated space. I know even for my work as well, I was actually doing what's technically still winter, because, you know, we're filming this in the beginning of February. So I was doing some, winter cleaning, not technically spring cleaning. And I was throwing a lot of stuff out, like old letters, papers and books, et cetera. And I was doing some work yesterday. And I don't know, I felt more like in my desk area, I felt more focused and more dialed in when I was like answering client emails. So I definitely think, you know, maybe there is something to that. Maybe I should go out and get some crystals and like hang them from the ceiling or, you know, scatter them around and maybe get one of those incense diffusers or even some Febreze just to spray around the air and see if that helps, makes a difference. Yeah. in my workspace as well. So I was curious, besides the Creativity Lab, do you have any other services that you offer as a creativity coach?
Yeah, so I'm actually launching a digital course on how to write a cozy mystery. I'm actually wrapping up the last module as we speak, so that'll be coming out this year, which is really exciting. I'm thrilled about this. And I also offer coaching packages, so group coaching, one-on-one if people are interested.
Awesome. So the Creativity Lab, I'm really interested. If someone was interested in learning more about the Creativity Lab, where would they go to find out about that?
Absolutely.
Do you have like a website or something?
Yes. So there is a link on my kateconti.com website. You can also go to getwritingwithliz.com and find some information there.
Awesome. So I really think that like a big theme that I'm taking away from our discussion today, going back to how you had started writing and you had joined Sisters in Crime and the New England Crime Bake to you eventually creating the Creativity Lab. I definitely see that I feel like there's almost like this, like a stigma around writing, that it's almost like a solitary activity where you're kind of like Ernest Hemingway, you know, sitting in a room, typing away in a typewriter, probably drinking an excessive amount of daiquiris. It's viewed as like a solitary activity. But I think what I'm getting from our discussion today is that it's really important to, you know, have that accountability and to be working closely with like your peers, people who have pretty much, I guess, how to say, like been up the mountain already, and they kind of know, they know like all the challenges and stumbling blocks that a new fledgling writer might have, and they can kind of help like collapse time and shorten like that learning curve. So I think you're probably doing really great work there in the creativity lab. So I guess I wanted to wrap up today. If anyone wanted to learn more about your books or find some of your books or join your newsletter, where could they find you or follow you on social? Do you have any social media handles? I think you mentioned your website, Kay Conti. But yeah, what are your social media handles so people could follow you and see what you're working on in the future?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I know it's confusing because I have two names, but first, all of my social links are available through my website. But on Instagram, I'm mostly doing my work around, you know, both writing my books and also talking about my business at lizmcgavro. Sorry, can you edit that?
No, we're not going to edit that. We're going to leave it. We're going to leave it just the way it is. I told you your name is Bob for the duration of our interview today, too, anyway. So yes, you can find out more about Liz at bob.com. Yes. No, just kidding. I will get your links in the show notes. All right. So I think that we are all wrapped up for today. We had Kate Conti / Liz McGavro / Bob dropping value bombs on writing mysteries, how to write a cozy mystery, and the importance of association and accountability. So
thanks for tuning in to the Pen to Profit podcast. If you've enjoyed hanging out with us today, swing by iTunes or your podcast app of choice and leave a rating and write a review. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button to get more of this grammar goulash delivered piping hot to your ear holes every week. And if you're looking for more tips, tricks, and free trainings that aren't available anywhere else, click the link in the show notes to join the Author Success Hub Facebook group. It's one part mastermind group and one part creative writing workshop. Except you can attend in your pajamas without judgment. Plus, you'll be mixing it up with fellow authors who are all about that writing and profiting life. Until next time, keep putting pen to paper and turning those pages to profit. Ciao.